continue now with the latest installment of the story of how Rav Baruch, father of the Alter Rebbe, became a chassid of the Baal Shem Tov. You'll recall that in last week's installment, we mentioned how Dvira Leah was upset that her brother Rav Baruch had left so suddenly before Pesach, and she had wanted to tell him much about their family background and how, in fact, that they had a very, very close connection to Hasidim from the mother's side. And we began discussing and relating about Dvira Leah's desire for learning and knowledge, for her mother Rachel was a tzidkonis and a great scholar, and Rachel began to tell her daughter about her upbringing. And we continue now with a conversation of mother to daughter about Rabbonis Rachel telling to Dvira Leah, Rav Baruch's sister, about her upbringing. As soon as I was able to speak, Rachel said to Dvira Leah, mother taught me every morning how to say Meidani Shma Yisrael Baruch Shem Tertziva. And when I was 3 years old, I already knew all the blessings of Birchas Hanenim, the blessings that are made over various objects which are eaten or enjoyed. I used to wash my hands for meal and make the bracha al Netilas Yadayim and Hamotzi, and at the end of the meal I would say the Berich Rachmona. And when I was 4 years old and my brother was less than three, I taught him the brachas, and I also taught him how to read the Hesius, the letters of the Aleph Beis with Kometz Aleph O, and all the Nekudas, all of that. My father, Rav Baruch Batlan, had all the qualities that could be found. A tremendously great scholar, very wise, a man who took his time making decisions, very good natured, and he was very, very humble, and people didn't know about his greatness. Nobody ever found my father learning, because he would be hidden in his own room and he would sit and learn day and night, and when somebody would knock on the door, he would close the sefer, close the holy book, put it in the bookcase. Then he would, only after putting away the book, would he open the door, receiving everybody very favorably. He never debated with people, whether it be in learning to show his greatness in learning. He liked to hear what others had to say, but his own novella, and he left hundreds and hundreds of pages. After his passing, he would only say from time to time and very briefly. My father would often repeat the saying of a wise man who said that it's good to be separate while together with people, and it is good to be alone while you are in the company of men. That means to say that a fine and upstanding person tries to keep to the middle path, the path of gold, the golden path, not to be separated from people, and at the same time not to waste his time spending too much money, but even though he is with people, but at the same time he spends time for himself. This saying was very, very important in my father's lifestyle. And when I was young, and even as I grew a little older, I did not understand it. But as I matured, I understood the importance, and I saw that my father's face and his actions showed that even when he was with people, he would be in his own world. His face was shining. There was a very fine smile and a sympathetic air about him. And he would satisfy all people who would look at him, but at the same time, he kept his own distance. Rachel further related that father, when he was 10 years old, already would be acting with alacrity with regard to Gemil Chasodim, was to offer free loans, because parents had given him an amount of money and he would lend it out to various poor businessman, and when he came back from yeshiva and he became engaged, and he gave meiser from the nadin which he was given, so a good portion of that meiser went to the free loan fund in the city. And after his marriage with my mother, he established a free loan fund, a private free loan fund, where he would lend to business people without any interest at all. And when I grew older, I began to understand how important it is to be a Goymel Chesed, to perform acts of loving kindness for others, and doing it in a selfless manner. Father was beloved by all, whoever it was, whether they were great scholars or simple people, everybody loved him very much, said Rochel about her father, Baruch Patlim. They would give him great honor, and even those who were opponents to Kabbalah and the path of the hidden Sadiqin. And as you know, Father, Baruch, was a Talmud Vosik, a very devoted student of Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem Tov, and one of the people that occupied themselves in the study of Kabbalah. But even those who opposed that gave great honor to my father, and the people in the city called him with the name of Baruch Patlin, because he was always sitting and learning. When I was a young girl, continued Rochel, I heard how everybody called my father Baruch Patlin, and I was called Rochel, the daughter of Baruch Patlin, and my brother was called Binyamin, the son of Baruch Patlin. I thought that Patlin was the name of our family, as everybody else was known by the family names of Brandeis, Klober, Speyer. And we had a friend whose name was Rav Shimon Aryeh, and he was a distant relative of my mother. He was a lively guy, and he liked to tease me. Once he called me Rochel, the youngest of girls. Sometimes he would honor me and say, "Oh, Rochel Portugali," and I would run away from him. Once he got me very angry when he called me Rochel Portugali once and again and another time, and I cried, and my father heard my cry. He went out of his room where he was sitting and learning, and he asked me, "Why are you crying, Rochel?" And I said, "Shim Shinari is teasing me. He calls me Rochel Portugali. Our name is Matlin, our family name. Why is he calling me another name? I'm your daughter. And if you're a Baruch Patlin, so my name is Rochel Patlin." My father calmed me down. He didn't say anything. He just smiled. But when I grew a little older, I found out that our family name is actually Portugali. And the name Patlin is the name that was given for the city and people. And that was a sign of honor, saying that his qualities are such that everybody within the city, the scholars, the rich people, are bottled, they are nullified before him. Father, Rabbanu Rochel continued, did not do anything, whether it was in business or other aspects of life or the conduct of his house, without asking first Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem Tov. Mother, Zerlei asked, "You told me many times that if I don't understand something, you are telling me, I should ask you right away and do not delay it, because I may forget what I want to ask. Several times already, you mentioned Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem. What does Baal Shem mean? Is this a regular name? Is it a family name? Or is it a title? Tell me about this," Verle asked her mother Rochel. "The name Baal Shem," she answered, "is a double name. It is a general name and a specific name. Everything which is special in its kind or of its age is known as a Baal Shem. It has its own name because it is named for its quality." And so we learn in the Mishnah, in Masechet Peya, Rochel continued, "Kol Zayis Sheyesh Lo Shem Basada," that any olive tree that has a distinct name in the field, in the orchard, because it produces such good olives, that this tree is better from the others because it makes better olives, and that is known Baal Shem. And so too, with regard to the person, when he's known as Baal Shem, that means he is select among people. But besides that, he is known as Baal Shem because he knows Kabbalah, he knows Jewish mysticism, and with the wisdom of his Holy Torah, he makes various miracles. As I've told you various stories about Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem, and that is why he's called Baal Shem, because of his knowledge of the divine names. The Almighty has many names, continued Rochel. There are the seven revealed names, and we mention this in our prayers, in our supplications. Sometimes we call God with one name, and sometimes another name, as established by the men of the Great Assembly, who knew, according to the Kabbalah, which was handed down from tradition from generation to generation, the significance of various names, and each one has its own effect. And one needs to know in every name what its effect is and how it may be pronounced. And the Tzaddik Rabbi Yoel knew all the various names of God and how to pronounce them and their effects. And that's why he was called Baal Shem. He knew how to utilize in the intentions of the divine names, and by mentioning them, was able to bring through them various miracles. Zerileah continued to ask her mother, "Did your father, Baruch Patlin, my grandfather, also make wonders? Since he was a disciple of the Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem, surely he also knew these names, and he could do miracles like him. Surely my father knew some of the names as they were written in the books of Kabbalah, but surely he didn't use it to make miracles, because to utilize a divine name is only permissible by somebody who was given permission or commanded from the celestial court. And even such a person may not use it for individual purposes, but only for the benefit of the multitude and to sanctify the divine name." This lesson, which Rachel taught Verilea about God's names, had a tremendous impact upon her, because she had never heard about this. And although she was davening for many years, mentioning God's name, but she never paid attention to the difference of one name and another. She had also heard about the celestial court, but it wasn't clear to her what that meant until this day. There are still some things which were not clear, but she left it for another time, and she turned, meanwhile, to her mother with the following question: "You tell me, mother, that God makes things happen through different names, and to say the exact pronunciation of certain names is only to select them individuals. So what about those who pray and don't know how to think about the exact intention of the name?" "You ask a very, very good question, my daughter. And that shows me two things. That first of all, that you're receiving well that which I'm telling you. And secondly, that you're doing that which I told you to ask, whatever you don't know, even if it's a simple question. I want you to know, my daughter, there's nothing better than simple faith in God. There's nothing better than a simplicity of the heart. Simple faith in God, that He created the world and He conducts the world with kindness and with mercy. That is the essence of a Jew. And since a Jew prays with this tamimus, with this simplicity to God, his prayers are automatically heard, even if he does not know the name. And God provides him with all the needs that he needs, just as if he would have known the name. Let me give you an example," Rachel said. "The father who takes care of his child. His father, the child doesn't have to use any special name. He just calls him Father. Father, give me sustenance. Father, make me well. But if the child has a special request, which is out of the ordinary, then the child approaches the father with different titles and different ways so that the child will have his wish fulfilled. And sometimes, or for whatever the reason, the father will not hearken directly to the child, but only if somebody intercedes on the child's behalf. My father, Rachel continues, who was a devoted disciple of the Tzaddik Rabbi Elbal Shem Tov, liked and loved, in fact, very much the simple folk who just were simple God-fearing individual Jews, performed mitzvahs with alacrity and with beauty without knowing all the reasons. And it just was sufficient that they knew that these were commandments of God. And he used to say that he has the same respect from the simplicity of Rab Leib Shol, the wagon driver, and even more respect than from the Chiddushim and the novella of Rab Shlomo Leib, the genius of Prague. And this is the path of those who study Kabbalah, and they conduct themselves in this way of the hidden tzaddikim, to love all actions that come from the simplicity of the heart without differentiating who it is that does it, whether it be man or woman, because in the secret of souls we all have one Father, and we are all able to serve God. And so it was, Rachel concluded, that Father, in his great wisdom, looked at my soul, and he understood that he should teach me Torah, and he got me a teacher who taught me in an orderly fashion, and he just made sure that it not be known. For 5 years of learning with my private teacher, I got a very thorough knowledge of Tanakh, of Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim, with all their commentators, as well as Mishnayos, the order of Zeroyim, with the commentaries of the Rash and the Rambam. And when I was 12 years old, I began to learn Gemara with much depth. And in addition to this, my father gave... placed upon me many of the household chores, cooking, baking, and washing clothing, and so I conducted myself till I married your father, Schneer Zalman, and I was then 19 years old, because your father is older than me by 4 years. He was 23 years old. The fact was that whether it was because of modesty, or people would regard his daughter as somebody different, or perhaps he was afraid that Rachel might get an eye in horror, an evil eye, the fact remained that when Rachel, at the age of 19, became engaged to the great scholar of Schneer Zalman, Schneer Zalman did not know that he was marrying a Lamdonis, a very, very learned lady. As for Rachel herself, knowing already that her fiancé belonged to those who did not approve of women studying Torah, she decided to keep silent about herself. She smiled when, after the wedding ceremony, her husband said to her that he assumed that her mother had taught her all the laws that a Jewish woman was required to know. Despite the years that Rachel had devoted to Torah study, she was nevertheless a perfect housewife and housekeeper. Rachel's knowledge of Jewish law was so extensive that she knew the differences and the customs prevailing amongst the various Jewish communities. Thus, what apparently was regarded as a strict law in one town was treated more lightly in another. For instance, in the region of Poznan, the Jews followed the ruling of the Shabbos Leket, wherein it is stated that gloves should be worn on Shabbos only when they are attached or sewn to the sleeves. And this was quite a common custom of wearing gloves in those times, even in the warmer weather, as a formal dress. This naturally was done on Friday, when the gloves were attached. In Poznan itself, there was an Erev, and so Jews wore gloves there even when they had not been attached to the sleeves. It happened once that Rachel's whole family, soon after her marriage, were walking home on Shabbos from the Beis HaMedrash. The men were walking in front, Baruch Bachlan, his son Binyamin, and his son-in-law Schneer Zalman. The women followed in the rear, Rachel among them. They were all wearing gloves in honor of Shabbos, and living as they did in Poznan, they did not need to have their gloves stitched to their sleeves. But Yeoman was also carrying some books which he had borrowed from the Beis HaMedrash so that he could study them at home. As they were walking, a shamash suddenly ran up to them panting, calling out that the Erev had broken and that now the Erev had failed. It was not a working Erev they could not carry. They all stopped in bewilderment, not knowing what they should do with their gloves and with the sforim that Rachel's brother had under his arm. Should they throw everything away, put it down, or should they remain where they were? Could they go on? Could they stop? They had no idea what to do. Baruch Batlan now called out to his daughter, "Well, Rachel, you're an expert in the laws of the Shulchan Aruch. Tell us what we are to do now." And turning to the men, he remarked with a smile, "We men are so busy studying Gemara and other such courses of study that when we are faced with deciding upon an article of law, we do not know what to do. We are therefore left with no alternative but to turn to Rachel." The Pshner Zalman, who was a great scholar, and 4 years Rachel's senior, as mentioned previously, opened his eyes in wonderment at her. Was this some sort of a joke? How could a mere woman come to such knowledge? He had regarded Rachel as a fine but naturally uneducated woman like anyone else of her sex. Rachel began to blush. Knowing her husband's views, she feared he might now look upon her with displeasure, and she was worried. She would certainly not, at this early stage in her relationship with her husband, have wished to give away the secret that she herself was a scholar. She was by nature rather modest and retiring, but her father had put her in a spot, and she saw she must answer him under the circumstances. The question was quite an easy one for her to answer. "There is no need to take off our gloves," she ventured quietly, "for this is a case of bidi'evid, after the fact, and there can be no likelihood of any of us taking off his gloves and carrying them, for as we are in a company of each other, it would immediately be noticed, and the person would be reminded, so it's not something that would be taken off, and therefore we can carry it. As for the books, these should be transferred from hand to hand, pochas pochas medaladamas, as it's in the Shulchan Aruch, until we reach the yard of a non-Jew, where they would be handed over from the zone of public property, from Rishus HaRabim or Carmelis, into that of private property, into Rishus HaYachid. None of those present knew whether Rachel had quoted the law correctly or not, but her father said they had no alternative but to accept her ruling in the matter under the circumstances. But as soon as they reached home, they looked up the case in the Shulchan Aruch and found it exactly as Rachel had stated. As Rachel had foreseen, Shneir Zalman, her husband, was adversely affected by the foregoing incidents and took every opportunity of making sharp and cutting remarks, just as if his wife had done something dreadful. He once remarked that the Gemara says that the wife of a scholar is regarded as if she too were a scholar, but in my case it would seem that I must be satisfied to reach the equal of my wife's status. Rachel was naturally very grieved at his attitude, and so her father replied, "Shalmi says that the wife of a criminal is also considered so. I have given my daughter into your hands, and now remains to be seen what you make of her. She can either become the wife of a scholar or the wife of a criminal. It is entirely up to you." Abshneir Zalman understood the implication of his father-in-law's words, and from that time changed his harsh and critical attitude towards his wife. On the contrary, and he began to be very proud of his wife, Rachel, appreciating at last her great learning and wonderful qualities. Yitz Hashem, in the next installation, we will relate more about Rachel's learning and Baruch, and about Verilea's learning, and also about younger Baruch and Verilea as they were called small children, how they grew up, and the various parts of their life, which brings them finally together again as Rav Baruch is about to get married. But that, Yirtzeh Hashem, in the coming installment.